How do we continue faithfully to confess and practice our Lutheran faith in a culture of secularism, pluralism, and relativism? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is the 2017 edition of Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 edition. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. The sex scandals have proliferated. They are all over the place. You either turn on your device and go to your Twitter feed, or you turn on television, or you don't even have to turn on television. It kind of assaults you in every other way. And almost every day, another big name, a name that you know, or at least if you were in the know, you would have known, is being called out, perhaps losing a job, losing a career over sexual assault or sexual harassment. What's going on here? What are we caught up in? Joining us to talk about sex scandals and sexual ethics, Mark Hemingway. He's a regular guest, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, and author of a recent column titled, Washington Post, Conservatives Are Right About Sex. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back.
Mark, I watch my trending topics on the side of my Twitter interface here, and names creep up to the top for the last 2 or 3 weeks. Those names that crept to the top are all bad news. They're all some sort of sexual allegations. Today it was Jim Nabors. I thought, not Jim Nabors. And it turns out he's only dead. He's not a sexual predator. But you get through a week and 3 or 4 major names in the media have been outed as some sort of sexual predators. And if it doesn't happen, I feel like it's a slow news day. What are we caught up in?
This is a really good question. One thing I've been struck by is the fact that we don't even have a name for it. I mean, the media are addicted to, you know, coming up with a name for some phenomenon anytime there's more than like 2 or 3 examples of it, you know, preferably with a suffix gate attached to it. And it's really sort of interesting to me that, you know, there's been no like label appended to this like sort of present moment. It just, you know, it started with the Weinstein allegations and it's just been sort of snowballing from there. I mean, I think part of the reason why is that people just don't want to like look at what's happening on a very, very deep level. They don't want to think of it as a macro phenomenon, in part because what this really shows is how deeply flawed human nature is, and how I think for a long time in our society, people have been pretending that we're okay with sex and we're okay with the way that sex interacts with human nature in a world where there are basically no moral institutions or big moral curbs on that behavior. And I think that's just, you know, kind of what's going on. People don't want to examine how morality and sex, you know, and how, you know, judgment and moral judgment are related to sex. We've been living in a libertine culture for far too long.
How do you account for the shift in the coverage of these things? For a while, it was Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly. And then when Harvey Weinstein broke, suddenly there was a shift in the way these things were being covered. How do you account for it?
So this is a good question. And as it happens, my friend Jonah Goldberg wrote a fantastic column in National Review yesterday addressing this exact point, saying it is really interesting that for all of the attention that was given to Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly and Fox News and all that stuff, none of that precipitated a big break in this sort of, you know, like avalanche of sexual assault allegations. And to some extent, I would even lump Bill Cosby in there, because at the time the Bill Cosby scandal started breaking, and, you know, Bill Cosby had, you know, achieved a level of prominence for offering moral critiques of Black America in a way that liberals did not appreciate. So I think what's going on there, you know, per what Jonah said, is that when conservatives get caught up in this kind of sort of hypocritical behavior, it doesn't prove any larger thing as far as the secular liberal world is concerned, because they are sort of naturally inclined against, you know, conservatism and moral traditionalism, such that when conservatives get caught in hypocritical behavior, it just proves that conservatism is fundamentally flawed. Whereas when something indicts the liberal culture more broadly, which I think this sort of Weinstein sexual harassment moment clearly does, because obviously far more liberals are being caught up in it, even if it's just by dint of the fact that it's very hard to be an outspoken, you know, moralist or more political conservative and attain any position of power in this country anymore. You know, again, they don't want to examine the causes of it and admit that there's some fatal flaws within this sort of liberal, you know, libertine way of dealing with sex. So they pretend that something is wrong with America writ large, you know, and that we're all somehow accountable for this, and this is all just baked into the cake of society. They don't come to terms with it. And that's because I think this liberal secular worldview doesn't account for human nature, which is to say that people who are politically conservative or Christian have an innate understanding that human nature is bad. So when someone who is proclaims to be conservative or Christian acts hypocritically, it only sort of proves the point, even if, you know, the hypocrisy is bad. You know, the existence of sin among Christians does not disprove Christianity, but rather it's the fact that hypocrisy is an inescapable part of the human condition is the entire point of Christianity, you know, right? Whereas liberals seem to get away with being hypocritical about hypocrisy. You know, they sort of deny the existence of human nature and pretend that we live in a perfectible temporal existence, politically and otherwise. And then when there's evidence to show that that's not the case and that human nature is still a huge problem for people, just kind of shrug and say, well, what are you going to do? Human nature is human nature, and they get to have it sort of both ways.
You are responding in part to Christine Embo writing for the Washington Post in her piece titled Let's Rethink Sex. What is the narrative that's kind of being placed over this entire, well, you call it the great sex panic of 2017. What's the narrative that's being crafted there, and how do you respond to it?
Well, so Christine Embo wrote this piece, you know, where she talked about how it was, you know, maybe this is time to embrace virtue again in America now that we see that there are these problems. And I don't want to beat upon Emba too much, because I actually think she's quite friendly to conservative and or Christian arguments in terms of, you know, how people view morality. And anyone that smuggles, you know, a column into the Washington Post saying that we need to embrace virtue in relation to sex in the 21st century, you know, is A-okay in my book. But having said that, I mean, it's also profoundly frustrating to that, because it's not as if this current moment was unpredictable. In fact, for the better part of 50 years, you know, conservatives and Christians and other people have been screaming bloody murder about the logical consequences of this growing social liberalism when it comes to the sort of constant one-way cultural ratchet that is designed to do nothing but make more and more behavior acceptable that was once viewed as immoral. And so, you know, when you look at the consequences of all these policies, you know, no-fault divorce, you know, widespread birth control, abortion on demand, you know, the complete destruction of the family by, you know, poorly implemented social welfare programs, you know, this is all perfectly, the situation we're in right now is perfectly logical outcome that was perfectly predictable and was, in fact, predicted by lots of people. So to say, oh, well, gosh, I guess now that we should now return to virtue, now that you've destroyed every institution, you know, that would have been in a position to sort of buttress this virtue, and that, you know, was previously seen just 15 minutes ago as being unnecessarily, you know, judgmental and backwards in its approach to sex, to now say, gosh, we need those institutions, or we should embrace their approach, after you've spent 50 years destroying these people and saying these arguments are invalid, it's profoundly frustrating.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about sex scandals and sexual ethics. He used that term, cultural ratchet. Can it be turned back to something approaching a common sense consensus on sexual ethics? That next.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
It's tough to be Lutheran in America these days. Our families, our schools and churches, even our most deeply held beliefs and values are under fire. We need unchanging truth in a world full of confusion. The Lutheran Witness magazine can help. For less than a quarter a day, get the best of Lutheran reflection on faith and life, theology and culture, delivered monthly right to your mailbox. Learn more at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman. We're talking about sex scandals and sexual ethics. Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard is our guest. He's author of a recent column titled Washington Post Conservatives Are Right About Sex. He was also a speaker at our fall Making the Case conference earlier this month. You can listen to his presentation, Making the Case for Religious Liberty, and almost 20 hours of teaching and preaching on an audio DVD of both of our 2017 conferences. We'll send it to you for a suggested year-end tax-deductible gift of $300. You can order online by clicking the conference audio DVD logo at issuesetc.org or by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83. Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Be sure to write audio DVD on the memo line of your check. Mark, before the break, you used the term cultural ratchet, this kind of always going for the next thing in terms of dismantling those mechanisms in society that put any limit or anything on sexual behavior. Can it be turned back? The nature of a ratchet is once it's turned, it can't be turned back. Is it possible to turn back things to something resembling a common sense consensus on sexual ethics?
Well, look, anything is possible, but all things are possible with God, right? And certainly in a historical sense, there have been, you know, ups and downs in terms of, you know, morality in this country. And we've had great awakenings and other religious movements that have provided very good things to the culture, although rarely, you know, big moral movements, you know, are uniformly good. But, you know, the point is that cultural change on a mass scale is certainly possible, and I don't think that anyone should give up hope. But looking at the current situation here, we have generations of people who have been taught, you know, women who have been taught that the life growing inside them that is worthless, and generations of men who have grown up in single parent households with no positive examples of male commitment to relationships. And, you know, it's quite the heavy lift at this point in time to walk into a society, like I said, where, you know, all of the institutions designed to support families, all of the institutions designed to support churches or the churches themselves, you know, have been completely undercut. I mean, just a few years ago, the Obama administration explicitly threatened the tax-exempt status of churches that refused to say that sex outside of marriage, that refused to condone sex outside of marriage. So, you know, it does not seem like a cultural climate where one would be terribly optimistic about a widespread movement that returns us to virtue anytime soon.
A frequent guest on this program, Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute, pointed out recently that feminism has had the effect of politicizing every personal relationship that it manages to touch. And I wonder whether or not what we're seeing here, you talk about the inevitable outcome of the sexualization of our culture. I wonder what we're seeing here is men of power. This is largely men. Well, there are probably some women in there too, but men of power are simply exercising that power as they see fit. If relationships, even sexual relationships, are reduced to politics, and politics is the exercise of power in the workplace or in the newsroom, then sex is going to be the tool.
Not surprisingly, I think that's exactly right. I mean, you know, feminism at some point ceased to be about, you know, what was better for women and more about exercising political power by, you know, leveraging the oppression of women, you know, to shame people into doing what they wanted. And you know, clearly we see the outcome of it. You know, do we look at the 21st century and do we say women are, you know, better than they were 50 years ago? I mean, obviously by a lot of measures, they are, I think. But in a lot of ways, you can look at the situation that women are in, and you know they're obviously worse. And further, you know, there were all sorts of things. I'm not saying that. I mean, obviously, we have more enlightened attitudes about, say, women in the workplace than we did 50 years ago, and to a larger extent, I think that's a good thing. But it's also true that, you know, whenever we conduct giant social experiments on ourselves in terms of, you know, forcing cultural changes that don't happen organically through politics, as the feminist movement very much did, you end up with a lot of collateral damage. And I think we're seeing that if you look at how powerful men are acting in the workplace. But, you know, again, there was a time, I also think, though, that where there was a lot more of a downside to behaving poorly, you know, publicly. And it's taken a long time to reach this point where men who are in positions of power and abusing their authority for, you know, sexual gain are being called out, because it's not like these people weren't doing this behavior for years. And we've known about Weinstein's problems for years, and no one didn't do anything. You know, it took a while for it to reach critical mass. And so people need to think about, like, you know, why that is. I mean, I think often, you know, there's an interesting essay I actually wrote another piece about recently, where in the Paris Review, with this woman has written this sort of hand-wringing essay about what do we do with Woody Allen, because his personal life is troubling. But it's not just his personal life is troubling. You go back and you watch the film Manhattan, which is about a grown man, you know, having a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old girl. And this was the height of culture in the 1970s. I mean, it was nominated for 2 Oscars and won the Golden Globe for best drama. Did it not occur to anyone at the time that this was bad back then? I mean, that's the most shocking thing about it. Not that, you know, Woody Allen is this person. I mean, I think Woody Allen, if anything, must feel betrayed. Here's a guy that came out and said, you know, I'm going to push the sexual liberation message that you want, and I'm going to, you know, in my private life, start to enjoy the fruits of that by dating the teenage daughter of my wife. And, you know, why are people upset about this? I mean, in one sense, you know, it's totally right. I mean, everyone seemed to be okay with it for a very long time. And now all of a sudden, we've collectively decided that we're not okay with these things. And that seems to me like it is a very strange thing for people to be turning on a dime about.
As a journalist, can you explain to me another common thread in these stories? And that is everybody knew. So you have Harvey Weinstein, everybody knew, or everybody who was in a position to know knew. You have Matt Lauer, and apparently it was common knowledge that he was kind of a workplace Lothario, and sometimes worse. And then in the case of Charlie Rose, long stories, people say, oh yeah, that's Charlie. Everybody knew. How do you explain that kind of persistence in these problems?
You know, I don't really know. I mean, other than to say that people in the journalism industry are both ambitious, and it's also sort of a situation here of, you know, who watches the watchmen. It's very hard to, you know, police your friends, basically, and all people that might be in a position to further your career and ambitions down the line. And I think that has a lot to do with what's going on about these scandals that seem to be overwhelmingly focused on sort of the media entertainment complex thus far. But it is a big indictment here. I mean, obviously, there's certainly a pervasive culture inside of these powerful institutions, these sort of, you know, East Coast elitist, you know, organizations that I don't think actually exists in broader America to the degree that it does here, even if there are problems everywhere. I would think this would be an occasion for everybody to step back and take a very hard look about why they didn't report these stories. But we know that the answer is going to be, you know, rather damning in the sense that it's going to indict a lot of people who didn't have the courage to do anything about it or didn't have the courage to support people who wanted to say something about it. But on the other hand, it's also important to remember here that, women are the victims here, and it's very hard for women to deal with sexual assault problems, if for no other reason than very often they want careers themselves, and they don't always want to be known as primarily for being the person that took down someone bigger and more powerful. They want to be, valued on their own terms. And further, a lot of women are just victims of sexual trauma, and it makes things very difficult to talk about and requires a lot of courage. And so it's important to remember that we support these women in any way possible and make sure that they're heard. At the same time, we engage in the kind of responsible reporting and due process that is necessary to, protect people from false allegations.
With only about 15 seconds here, Mark, do progressives learn a lesson here? Will they walk away not only saying, well, this is a real problem, but they learned something about what they've been up to for the last 3-4 decades?
I don't have any idea. I mean, I'm not optimistic about much of anything in terms of the cultural situation in this country. And I think to a large degree, what's going on here is that the sort of practical incentives, political and otherwise, are aligned for liberals to be holding themselves accountable right now. But I don't know if that necessarily means that everyone has suddenly developed a conscience. But clearly, everyone in this country needs to take a hard look at the culture and their own behavior and their place in it.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard, author of a recent column titled Washington Post, Conservatives Are Right About Sex. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark, thank you.
You're welcome.
Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, has been brought to you in part today by Concordia University, Wisconsin. They offer 50 online educational options for an associate's, a bachelor's, or a master's degree, and they'll even waive your application fee when you use the promo code ISSUES. Just click the Concordia University, Wisconsin online logo at issuesetc.org and type the promo code ISSUES, ISSUES. Lifelong Lutheran Learning, Concordia University, Wisconsin online. Friday on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Marjorie Dannenfelser about Planned Parenthood's legal trouble. She says Planned Parenthood may in fact be reaching a legal turning point. That might be good news. We'll get a review of the movie Wander with Pastor Ted Geese. And on This Week in Pop American Christianity, we'll discuss Beth Moore's teachings on baptism with Pastor Chris Rosebro. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Be transported back into the town of Bethlehem and hear the townspeople talk of the special night when Mary and Joseph arrived, the star appeared above, and Jesus' birth. Lord of Life Lutheran Church in Chesterfield invites you to a nativity drama Friday evening, December the 1st from 6 to 8, and Saturday and Sunday afternoon, December the 2nd and 3rd from 2 to 5. Handicapped accessible. Call 636-532-0400. Free of charge, appropriate for all ages.
Jesus the Good Shepherd says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life." We invite you to join us as we listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd and follow him who gives us eternal life. Sunday worship services at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible class at 10:30, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri, on the web at goodshepherdarnold.org. That's goodshepherdarnold.org.